Good morning, judges. My name is Andre Wooten. I am the attorney for the plaintiff appellant Stephanie Stuckey in this case. And within the 10 minutes that we have, we would like to make at least 4 points. Ms. Stuckey filed a complaint for damages for violation of her civil rights, in this case pertaining to a notice of termination that was based upon a prior suspension. In this particular case, the district judge acknowledged that the plaintiff had established a prima facie case.
Well, apparently, so since there's not a lot of time, let's go to the pretext. And you have to, what evidence did you present to the district court to show that the reasons for Ms. Stuckey's suspension and termination were pretextual?
The 35 exhibits that we presented, the declaration of Ms. Stuckey, the declaration ultimately of...
Be more specific than that. I don't want just that. What is the evidence? It doesn't say you can just say it's a declaration, because the declaration could say blah, 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 blah. That wouldn't be necessarily the evidence. What's the evidence, the pretext that you pointed out to the district court?
Well, part of the problem is that the court erred in ignoring a lot of the evidence that we pointed out. The declaration of Ms. Stuckey does indeed encapsulate most of it, and it talks about specific instances of discriminatory conduct. The principal removed her position from the school staff improperly and attempted to eliminate her position. She filed a civil rights complaint and a grievance and eventually got that overturned, and thereafter there was retaliation against her in terms of moving her classes around. She moved her from the music room into an old cafeteria room which wasn't set up for musical instruments. I mean, musical instruments are expensive, and there was no place to lock these instruments up to secure them. When she complained about that, the principal retaliated against her. Moreover, this cafeteria was infested with fleas. It was infested with rats. When the students complained about these things, Ms. Stuckey had to talk to the parents, and the principal criticized her for doing so. A teacher has a right to a First Amendment right to engage in conversations pertaining to reasonable things to do with her
if you're job. Making that, but you say those things, but I'm looking at her declaration, and she refers to the staff reduction attempt, and her statements weren't based on any personal knowledge, and they're conclusory. For example, she declares that Kilbourn unilaterally sought to get rid of plaintiff by striking her music class. But you got to put in evidence if you want to rely on something.
Well,
you can't just state conclusions.
If you read further into her declaration, and Kilbourn's declaration says that the art department voted to do so. Ms. Stuckey, who is present, was the chairman of the art department, and there was no vote. And her declaration points out that this was a unilateral act by the principal, which she claimed was a vote of the department. And Ms. Stuckey, being the chairperson of the department, totally contradicted that in her statement, saying that there was no such meeting, there was no such vote. And consequently, that is indeed a reasonable question of fact for the jury. Furthermore, Ms. Stuckey was suspended, supposedly, for not taking appropriate action when a student in her orchestra class, and we're talking about a class of over 100 students in an orchestra class, the students were combined. Anyway, a bench collapsed through no fault of Ms. Stuckey's whatsoever, and a girl claimed that she was hurt. The girl's friends...
Are you disputing that she was hurt?
Yes, we are. We're disputing that she was seriously injured. We're not disputing that she cried. But the medical records indicate that she was not seriously hurt. And one of the reasons for that was she was wearing a metal brace on her ankle because of a pre-existing injury. And that brace, according to the doctor, prevented any serious injury. And consequently, the argument can be made that that was sort of a made-up situation by the student in order to get out of the class.
Counsel, most of the evidence that you provided to us, the instances you cited to Judge Callahan, go to the question of retaliation. And the district court has said, you've made out a prima facie case of retaliation. At that point, it then becomes the state's burden to come back and show a reason for termination, which the district court said they've done. It now, the burden then goes back to you to show that their reasons are pretextual. So citing retaliation evidence is not going to satisfy your burden of pretext. So what evidence do you have that the firing was pretextual?
Well, number one is the fact that Ms. Stuckey had filed a series of complaints, EEO complaints and
but
civil rights complaints.
That all goes to retaliation. What's pretextual? I understand the retaliation claims. And the district court said, and we will, and I think we're going to have to accept today, that you have made out a prima facie case of retaliation. Now, how can you show that the termination was pretextual?
The Department of Education did not follow its own rules and regulations in terminating Ms. Stuckey. There was no due process hearing. Indeed, there still has not been a due process hearing for her to be appraised of the allegations against her. Indeed, at the meeting in which the principal gave her the termination notice, that notice was a single piece of paper. It was not backed up by the so-called statements, the argument of the department, and Ms. Stuckey was not presented with that until a couple of months later. That was a serious due process violation. The grievance hearings in this particular matter were suspended and have never been held, and consequently there's never been an appropriate opportunity for Ms. Stuckey to present her arguments in contradiction to the allegations made against her. Also, with regard to pretext, we're arguing that this is a hostile work environment situation under National Railroad and under the Lyons case. We're specifically arguing that when the district judge ruled that he did not have to consider the factual allegations of discrimination and retaliation in a previous case that he had dismissed regarding Ms. Stuckey and the DOE were irrelevant. We believe that that is incorrect. We concede that Ms. Stuckey could not have a cause of action based upon those facts and allegations, but we concede, we argue that based upon National Railroad and the Lyons case, that that was part of the res justi. That was part of the history
of
the case.
The problem is, even if you may be correct, that the facts from that Stuckey 1, we'll call it, could be considered for pretext, you don't point out what the evidence was on that. It still comes back to, when on pretext, you have a burden then that you've got to point out evidence to the court from that. You can't just say, hey, look at Stuckey 1 and all of that background, incorporate that by reference, and you've got to do more than that.
Well, no, I would point to exhibits, certainly 25, 26.
Well, did you point that, did you, other than just say to the district court, hey, look at Stuckey 1 and that's our evidence of pretext, did you point to anything specific? Or were you just did that generally, like you just wanted to do right now?
Yes, we did. We pointed specifically to Exhibits 25, 26, 27. Those are letters from Eric Nagamini, who was Ms. Stuckey's union representative, who was raising questions and challenging the lack of due process that the state imposed upon Ms. Stuckey in terms of adopting the arguments of parents as opposed to teachers to use as justification for terminating her. They used unverified statements and inaccurate statements. One of the problems in this particular case is that we attempted to introduce the declaration of Union Representative Sam Moore. And during the course of this, Mr. Moore suddenly came down with stomach cancer and was unavailable. This was a surprise to us because we had worked with the union on a number of cases over the years and never had any problems dealing with the union reps in terms of getting some cooperation. However, Mr. Moore suddenly became unavailable for reasons that are medical and were confidential, and so we couldn't get an explanation of that until Mr. Moore reappeared about a month later and said that he'd been in the hospital being examined for stomach cancer, and subsequently he took leave off in order to undergo chemotherapy and the surgery and all that sort of things.
But he was available long before that, and you never attempted to depose him, correct? And the court
He had agreed to give us a deposition, and so based upon that agreement, we did not attempt to depose him until we found out that he was sick. At that point, the state had already set up a deposition of him, and one of the errors that we are arguing is that under those unique circumstances, the court should have accepted his declaration, because his declaration does indeed go through.
Well, then you get into the whole problem of where you submitted something to the court that you got into the court, and the court found bad faith.
Yes, and that is troubling indeed. I pointed out that in an exhibit to my...
Troubling from what perspective?
Argument, it was troubling...
I mean, it's troubling to me that you would do that as an officer of the court, but... and it's also troubling to me that you attempted in that to blame the district court, saying, well, if they had followed their procedures, then you wouldn't have been able to do it in the first place, and that's how the fraud was perpetrated on the court.
Well,
I mean,
there was no fraud perpetrated on the court.
I wouldn't have stole the money if I hadn't left it, my wallet on the bench.
No money was stolen. There was no attempt to sign Mr. Moore's signature. Mr. Moore had given me those words. The declaration that Mr. Moore created later confirms to the original one with certain grammatical changes. And indeed, his 114-page deposition lays out in clear detail the violations of the union contract and the lack of due process that was used for a pretext to terminate Ms. Stuckey in this particular case. Ms. Stuckey is or was a 25-year teaching veteran at this point in time. She had never received any negative evaluations or any warning evaluations, and suddenly after filing a couple of EEO cases challenging her treatment, she's suddenly an incompetent teacher. In the particular situation that they used to suspend her, supposedly not taking this student to the nurse's office, Mr. Moore testified in his deposition that he'd had cases where teachers had done that, and they were cited for leaving their class unattended. And it's a balancing act that a teacher has to make. I'm responsible for all these kids. Do I go to the nurse's office with one and leave the 100 behind that she's also responsible for? In this particular case, Ms. Stuckey knew that other teachers had been sanctioned for doing that. And she assured that older friends of the girl, students, accompanied her to the medical office, and so consequently she was taken care of. The fact that they used that dubious situation to suspend her when the medical evidence shows that the girl was not injured in any serious manner, shape, or form is evidence that there clearly was a pretext in this case, because that suspension, which has still never gone through the grievance process, there's still never been a due process opportunity for Ms. Stuckey to present her evidence regarding that, especially since there hasn't been a trial. Ms. Stuckey has never had a due process in this matter at all. We do point out that a deputy corporation counsel attorney did the exact same thing as I did, but he wasn't sanctioned. I assumed, based upon Mr. Moore's statement, that he was going to edit, look at, and sign the declaration. That's what he said. I emailed him the same thing the same day that we talked. I was totally shocked and surprised that he was absent for so long, but you know, when people come down with cancer, those things are shocking and they're confidential, and nobody in his office would explain why he was absent.
So you put his signature on the declaration?
I didn't sign his signature, no.
You put electronically his signature.
The other thing I want to say, at this point in time, we were learning the new electronic filing system. And in this record, there are a lot of indications of difficulty by myself in filing things. Some things I was filing the old-fashioned way, you know, and the declaration was one. We indicated that he was going to sign it. He indicated to us that he was going to sign it. But we did not try to sign his signature or forge his signature. We were going to supply his active signature once we got it. And ultimately, Mr. Moore did provide a declaration. Under the circumstances, because his cancer disease was a surprise, we certainly argue that that is a proper case under Bateman of a surprise to excuse the attorney's neglect in that case.
Okay, thank you. We'll hear from opposing counsel.
Good morning. Nelson Labetta for the State of Hawaii. May it please the Court. There's no evidence of pretext in this matter. What there is an evaluation that was a regularly scheduled evaluation for Ms. Stuckey. And it was found that on so many levels that she was an unsatisfactory teacher. Also, this case represents an investigation of misconduct on Stuckey's case when she failed to properly attend to one of her students who were injured.
Did the state follow the procedures for dismissing her? Mr. Wooten says that she was not given a due process hearing. She was given notice. She was not given the backup. That the grievance hearings were never held.
Your Honor, I believe there was no due process problem. What is in the declaration, or rather the argument of this case, is that she was not given the backup documents or the documents that upon which the principal had recommended the unsatisfactory evaluation. Yet, if we look at, I believe it's called Exhibit 740 of Ms. Stuckey, as well as Exhibit, I believe it's 24, there's indications that she had, in fact, within days, Exhibit 740 and Exhibit 4, pages 144 and page 89, she had the backup documents. In the performance...
Was she given a hearing?
That I'm not sure. It's not in the record, Your Honor.
Well, why wouldn't... Under what circumstances would she not be entitled to a hearing?
Your Honor, she may not be entitled to a hearing in the sense that if she wasn't terminated.
Wait, I'm sorry. She wouldn't be entitled to a hearing if she wasn't terminated?
That's correct.
Well, was she terminated?
I don't think she was, Your Honor. Not at this time.
Okay. Has she been terminated since?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Was she given a hearing?
I believe that might be pending, but I have no information as to whether or not she had that final hearing. And, Your Honor, that would be different from a hearing pursuant to a grievance on the collective bargaining agreement.
Okay. Was she given a grievance hearing under the CBA?
Your Honor, I don't think it was scheduled.
Was that at her option?
It is a scheduling matter between both the union and the department.
Okay, so who's got the responsibility for scheduling the hearing?
I think it's both under agreement.
Okay, so either one of them can ask for a hearing.
Yes.
Did she ask for a hearing?
I would presume that she would want a hearing if she filed a grievance. Yes.
Did she get a hearing?
I don't think so.
Okay. Would the fact that she asked for a hearing on her dismissal or suspension and was not given a hearing be evidence of the county's pretext? Or the Department of Education's pretext? So she was terminated from her job. She says, I want a hearing. And they don't give her a hearing. Is that evidence of pretext?
It could be, Your Honor, yes. Although before the court, Your Honor, is not the termination, whether it happened or it didn't happen. It is the unsatisfactory rating. And with regard to the rating, Your Honor, what she's claiming is that I didn't get the backup documents as the court had indicated. But her own declaration does not complain of that. Not in itself. What she does is she attaches exhibits, and two of which those exhibits indicate that she actually had those backup documents. Therefore, there's no pretext that she could assert before the court in this case. She also indicates that there's animus on the part of her principal, Catherine Kilborn, She says that the principal had solicited complaints from the students and teachers, but there's no evidence of that. She says that it's animus because I'm such a good teacher, but there's no one that, except for herself, that says she's actually a good teacher. In fact, of the 212 pages of backup documents, it says otherwise. Not one document, not one letter of recommendation, not even the union says she's a good teacher. What counsel indicated is that pretext can be somehow implied by looking at the prior incidents. However, the case that counsel relied upon, Lyon versus England, indicates otherwise. First, these prior incidents were not untimely. They're not something that were never adjudicated. The judge in Stuckey 1 had already dismissed these cases based upon her inability to show pretext. Second, these prior cases, because of the fact that she couldn't show pretext in the prior case, are not relevant to show pretext now.
Well, I don't know that I don't know that the facts can't be, if they weren't sufficient to show pretext, that might, relative to that charge, but the existence of the facts, if counsel had pointed to them, I mean, counsel just basically said Stuckey 1 should be considered as background in order to establish pretext in Stuckey 2. But, I mean, pretext requires something more specific on the part of, you know, to point to specific evidence that would establish that. So just pointing to Stuckey 1 isn't sufficient, but there might be something, there might be some facts in there that I think could, in fact, legally be considered, but I don't know what they are.
And that's part of the problem.
I mean, I think your approach is a little bit too narrow on just saying, well, Stuckey 1's decided, Stuckey 1's gone, and nothing that occurred in that situation can flow over to this particular lawsuit.
But, Your Honor, if we take the other approach and say that, well, for example, the prior incidents might be relevant to show pretext, but they're not sufficient, even if we assume that they're relevant, even if you assume that the court didn't rule on them beforehand, they're not relevant because they don't rebut in any way the 212 pages that are used as a backup to the
evaluation. Well, the problem is I don't know what appellant is alleging to from Stuckey 1 other than just Stuckey 1 the whole thing. And I don't think a court's required to, we're not required to sift through everything in Stuckey 1 just to pull out things. All right, go ahead.
And finally, Your Honor, even if we assume these things are relevant, the fact that we have complaints from parents and teachers about the abuses in the classroom, the name-calling, the favoritism, we have complaints of other teachers that their classroom curriculum was disturbed by Stuckey. We have the defiant attitude that Stuckey consistently refused to undergo remedial training as well as submitting to the teachings of a mentor, for example. All of these things indicate that the evaluation of Ms. Stuckey was not based upon animus or other inappropriate matters, but just the fact that she was a poor teacher. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Wood, would you like a minute for rebuttal?
Just briefly, I guess over time. But Judge Callahan was talking about Stuckey 1, and we attempted to make that argument during the hearing, but Judge Seabright cut us off saying that I know all about that. I've dismissed that. I don't want to hear that. So, you know, I mean, we did present that, I believe, as part of our exhibits, but there's no argument about it because, you know, Judge Seabright said he specifically didn't want to hear it, so I didn't go there. However, we would say that certainly under National Railroad and under Lyons, the totality of the circumstances, even events that occurred a year or two before, if they are similar and if they do indicate a pattern and practice, they are relevant with regard to matters that Judge Seabright should have considered, and consequently, based upon the minimal standard that the plaintiff needed to establish, Ms. Stuckey should have had a trial in this matter, and we ask for the court to allow her to have one.
Okay, thank you. Case is argued, stands submitted.